going to smoke.
We ask that you be away from any buildings. Also, we ask that you refrain from smoking e-cigarettes inside the building. If you find it necessary to smoke, please take it outside. Please be respectful. We are guests here at the church, and I would like to introduce our first speaker, Sylvia.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sylvia. I'm an alcoholic. This was sprung on me just a few minutes ago, so it's... But, you know, it was meant to be. Okay, again, Sylvia, an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is September 17th, 2012, and I have a home group, and it's with the women's meeting, and I'm really glad for that. I came from Connecticut, Karen, as well. I moved down here in 2014, so it's been a couple years since I've been here, but what a change in the meetings. It's more spiritual down here, and up north, I'll tell you, I was very, very quiet. I didn't even bother with my sponsor. I didn't even really pay attention to the meetings that much, because I mean, I did, but then I didn't get it. I didn't understand it until I came down here, because down here in the big book meetings and step meetings, they really explain things a whole heck of a lot more. I even got a good sponsor down here, and she's helped me out a lot, a real lot. I wish she was here tonight, but she couldn't make it. I started drinking at an early age. I was very young in junior high when I got suspended from school. I took a bottle of old granddad and mixed it with OJ, and I know that sounds gross. But the cops showed up, they emptied my purse out, and I got suspended, and I was afraid because my dad was abusive, and I seen that a lot growing up, and then my parents weren't really around, so it was hard for me. That's another thing, my parents are from out of the country. My dad's Hungarian and my mom's Peruvian, so I didn't really understand a whole lot, and they weren't really there for me. So I was like a little kid just growing up. Well, not really growing up, but just there. And I goofed up a lot. I didn't finish high school. I got pregnant at an early age too. And anyways, I went to treatment. My kids, I wasn't really there. Wasn't really a great mom, because I wasn't taught how to be a mom. And I was separated from my first three kids because they moved to Florida. They wanted me to come down as well, get away from my family, but I didn't. I went into treatment, and I tried so hard to get them back, but I couldn't. Anyways, after that divorce, I ended up getting remarried again, and I met that guy in the program, and we had two kids, so I had five kids, and they're all grown up now. I have a good relationship with all of them, but I put them through a lot. I put my whole family through a lot. One time I said I was going to go to a meeting, and I had my mom's car, and I went to the bar instead. And she was going in for surgery that night, and I didn't have a care in the world. And she was nervous wreck, my father was too, and so I had to put up with the punishment afterwards. And anyways, I had a blackout. I had lots of blackouts. I've been hospitalized. I had one DUI. In and out of the program, because I didn't work a program. I just went to meetings and socialized back then at the early age. And after so many blackouts and just hitting so many bottoms and being hospitalized, there's so many times I could have been dead or somebody else could have. And I'm just glad coming down here and meeting everybody. I love you all. I love the meetings. I know I have to open up a whole lot more, and I find myself opening up more especially with the women. And so it's important to have a sponsor. It's important to open up with your sponsor. It's important to use your numbers and call them on a regular basis to pray. And that's something else. I had a lot of anger, I think, because so many things happened in my life. I didn't want to believe. I just didn't think there was any God, because one thing after another kept happening. But I do believe. I had a dog that died, and some of you are dog lovers, some of you aren't, but mine meant a lot to me, and I'm still having a hard time with him being gone. He was like a little, like my little boy, and I said a prayer today, and I asked for some sign, and I kept seeing these orange butterflies, and that he was orange, an orange dog, and and then now to speak up here in front of everybody too. I find my life going a whole lot better now. And if I stop going to my meetings and stop talking to my sponsor and stop working the steps and start isolating, I'm just gonna end up back there. And I don't wanna do that. So, is it 10 minutes?
4 minutes.
What? Yeah? Okay. Well, that's it. Thank you.
And at this time, Tori will come up and read the traditions.
I'm Tori, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And Jordan's going to come up and give out the chips.
Hello everyone, my name is Jordan and I'm an alcoholic. Here at Fourth Dimension, we have a chip system we use to denote and celebrate lengths of sobriety. The first chip that we give out is a silver chip for anyone who wants to give up their old way of life and try this one out. That was Rob. We have a red chip for 1 month. That was Kristen with 1 month. We have an orange chip for 2 months. That was Benny and Jessica with 2 months. We have a green chip for 3 months. That was Mike with 3 months. We have a blue chip for 6 months. That was Donna with 6 months. A purple chip for 9 months. That was Andrew with 9 months. Do we have anyone with a year today? That was Morgan with 1 year. Anyone with multiples today?
13 months
right here. Natalie with 13 months. All right, if you haven't had a drink today, give yourself and your higher power a hand.
This is when I introduce the speaker, right? For our main speaker, for the main event of the night, it's a guy I look up to mainly because he's tall. I give you Ken from Parrish.
Wow. Big room. Exciting room. Exciting room. Give me 1 second, guys. You have a lot of stuff here. Can I move this book? Okay, my name's Ken. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm a member of the Palmetto Group, and my sobriety date is October 28th, 1985. Yeah, Wow was right. Thank you guys for my sobriety. There are a lot of really special people in this room, and so I'm going to do a couple things maybe a little different than I normally do. First of all, I want to tell you, I came in on the first three steps. The first step, admitted I was powerless over alcohol, but my life was unmanageable. I went to my first meeting at 17, and I was 30 when I got here. Do the math. Okay? And the other thing that's really important to me, you guys have these backwards, and it's really working well for me. The first tradition, we do together what we couldn't do alone. And that's really important to me, and then to have a group. You know, my first group was the world famous Waikiki Monday Night Men's Stag. And you know, I'll never forget, I went to, I'll share this with you because it's probably apropos. I went to a business meeting. I was probably a couple weeks sober, and I went back and I told my sponsor, I said, if I go to another one of those, I'm going to drink. And he said, Ken, you don't need to do that. You got enough on your plate. And it's interesting because I've been to quite a few business meetings since, but not in those first years of sobriety. I'm going to recognize a couple of people that are sitting here indirectly. I rode up here with my wife, who I met in service. I had dinner. God, it chokes me up. I had dinner with Cheryl and Steve. Cheryl was my wife's maid of honor. And Steve was probably the second guy I met in my group, the North Boca Step and Traditions group, when I moved here to Florida. And, you know, my recollection is he and Bruce and the rest of the group, I was the guy from Hawaii, and they were afraid I was going to change the group. That's my recollection. Another one, Dave is here. Dave was the chairperson when I became a GSR, and there's been a long journey after that, which maybe I'll get a chance to tell you about. So, experience, strength, and hope. First of all, I want to thank Travis for chairing. Thank you. And Sylvia, the speaker chair. Sylvia is a good friend. I guess we come from far. I moved to Parrish, which is just a little bit northeast of Bradenton, the end of July. So this coast is new to me. And I'll tell you that 5 years ago, well, let me finish thanking people. Rob, I want to thank you for being here for your first day. My first meeting was in Honolulu. I got in 2 DUIs in 3 days. You guys laugh at that. If I told you how many others there were, you wouldn't believe me. And I'll also tell you, I lost my license at 26 years sober. Yeah, figure that out. And it seems that some of my tickets had appeared, and I had made amends on those 2 or 3 different times, but they actually pulled my license when I went to renew it. So I'm like really out of whack here. All of you that picked up chips, you know, you are in for the journey of your life, and don't cut yourself short. Stick around. Come to another meeting tomorrow, and come to the one after that, and you're in for a journey beyond your wildest dreams. I grew up in a small town outside of Massachusetts, Framingham, Mass. It's about 20 miles outside of Boston. Nothing significant in my life till about the age of, well, let me back up. First grade, okay? I'm a little guy, believe it or not. The elementary school was 1 mile straight up the road. And on the way home, first of all, I was scared to death. That was my first day of school. I had been in kindergarten and I knew all the kids in the class, but first grade, that was a little alarming to say the least. So anyway, I'm on the way home from school and I got lost. And I like to tell you that I stayed lost until I found all of you. And that's somewhat true. The age of 14, probably 13 maybe, I started experimenting with booze. And I don't know about anyone else, but we used to, you know, I used to go find my dad's jug and I'd pour a little off and put a little water in, and you know, he wouldn't know the difference. And we used to skip school and we'd go down the neighbor's basement or our basement and we'd get drunk and that'd be the end of that. Never got caught. I often wondered when my dad took a drink, he probably didn't get much out of it. Now, I don't know about you, but when I take a drink, I need a result. So anyway, that's how life marched on. One day I came home from school. It's about 3:30 in the afternoon. My grandmother and grandfather were there. It was not unusual. My mom was a registered nurse. My dad, an electrical engineer. And I have an older sister, older brother, and 2 younger sisters. So anyway, my grandmother and grandfather would come out and she would make a meal. She'd do some laundry, do some ironing, a lot of help to my mom with 5 kids. You know, remember we're talking, I don't even know how many years ago. It's a long time ago. So anyway, a big black sedan pulled up in the driveway and it was 2 men got out of the car and my dad was in the middle. And I knew right then and there that my life had changed. My mom had been killed in a car accident that morning. Now, what's important about that is the way I handled that. I had a part-time job. I was involved in sports, probably 10 other things. At any rate, I gave all that up to watch my little sisters during the week. They were 6 years old, twins. And on the weekends, my sister and brother would come home from college and my sister would take over the duties. Well, it's interesting because I characterize my dad the strict, stern Marine. And what happened is I had got my driver's license somewhere in there, and on Friday night I had a nice container from that jug that was over here, and I would put that under the seat of the car and I'd have the car. And drinking and driving became a very big part of my story, needless to say. I don't know, a year or two went by, and my dad got remarried. And yank, all those privileges went right away. And I rebelled. You know, here I am, I'm 14 years old, I'm not sure if I'm a man or a boy, and my stepmom came into the picture, and she's got five kids, two in college, me in the middle, two little girls, and she never had children. So you can just kind of imagine how that went. So again, I'm still experimenting with booze. I don't remember my first drink. I can remember being a little kid and taking sips of beer. I remember my first social drink. And this is important. I'm, once again, 14 years old. We have a summer cottage on an island in Boston Harbor. And it's a really wonderful place. You think Florida's serene. Petix Island is the best. So anyway, spring fall weekends, I worked at a boat rental. And then all summer long. So at the end of the season, the boss would hold the party for the help. And there were, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so of us. So if you're over 18, now mind you, the drinking age is 21 in Massachusetts. If you were over 18, there was a full bar. If you were under 18, there was a refrigerator stocked full of Miller beer. So I drank 2 6-packs of Miller beer. Really important you know that, because I was a big guy and I could drink a lot for a young kid. I ate 2 lobsters. I danced with my boss's wife. Now my recollection, I don't know what's funny about that. This part's funny. Their living room seemed as big as this room. That's what I remember. I remember getting really sick. And I woke up in my buddy's, I found out this about 2 years ago. I woke up in his car. It happened to be a Nova. In the back seat of his car at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So needless to say, I'm doing blackout drinking at the age of 14. I never knew what a blackout was till after I sobered up. I had no idea. I used to lose periods of time and it scared the death out of me because I didn't know what happened. Age of 17, I got my first DUI. That was in Marlboro, Mass. And for those that don't know, that's where MAD started. And they were probably in my courtroom, but I know they were when I gave up drinking in Hawaii. Now, that's 6,000 miles away, and they were pretty established by then. But anyway, I owned a home in Marlboro. No, I'm 17. I didn't own a home. I'm 17 years old, I get my first DUI. I remember the meeting, not vividly, but I remember there was a gal next to me, and it had to be a big book meeting because we were reading from a blue book. They invited me to go for coffee after the meeting, and I had a really big decision to make. I can go meet the guys and the girls and have a drink, or I can go for coffee with all these old fogies. I went for a drink. a lot of drinking and driving in between. A lot of fun. I'm not going to tell you I didn't have fun with booze. I had a ball with booze. It made me 2 feet taller than I am now. It made me better looking than I am now. You know, it did a lot for me. And particularly, it gave me liquid courage. You know, I could talk to the women. The big guys didn't scare me. The little guys didn't scare me. Etc., etc. So drinking did a lot for me. I know today that I was probably drinking alcoholically around the age of 19. Fast forward, I'm in my early 20s. My high school sweetheart, we were engaged to be married. She took off to see her sister in Colorado and never came home. And I drank over that for a couple of years. So somewhere in between there, I had an industrial accident. I joined the Navy, went through boot camp, hurt my back. They sent me home. I'm working a second shift job trying to earn my way through college, and I had an industrial accident. I lost 4 fingers on my left hand. And therefore, I couldn't work. I had a big lawsuit going on. And it was 7 years before we settled. And when we did settle, I paid all my bills. I bought a home. I bought a Corvette. I bought a boat. And I put a little bit of money in the bank. New girl, new job. I'm selling cars at the local Chevy dealer. And I flew off the deep end. I'm going to pick up this book so mine doesn't fall on the floor because it's falling apart. But in this book, in the doctor's opinion, they talk about the 6 classifications of alcoholics. And I fall into every single one of those. And at any rate, I was institutionalized at that point behind locked doors. And, you know, if you're a good alcoholic like me, you can get out of locked doors. And I do that. And then, you know, if you spit in the sidewalk, they can arrest you. And I'd end up back there. And AA was brought to my attention once again. I wasn't ready. I got through all of that and basically got well. It was a big bottom in my life, very big bottom in my life. I'm living in a room. I'm pumping gas. After work, I go drink. I'll never forget. I lost my license in Massachusetts forever. And so one of my buddies, his dad lent me a moped. And I'll never forget it. I would get on this moped after work, 11 o'clock at night, and I'd drive down to the local pub and get obliterated and then try to drive the moped back home. And, you know, this is pretty major road, so it's kind of amazing. You know, if you don't think there's a God, that's just a for instance. You know, I used to drive a boat standing up, and I couldn't stand up. So it's amazing I'm standing here. So I got through that whole kit and caboodle. One of my buddies had been home. He was an officer candidate school, had been stationed in Hawaii. He came home. We went to Rhode Island. We stayed with, my recollection is, 6 women teachers. And yeah, it was a great weekend. I fell in love. He fell in love with this gal's sister, and then my roommate fell in love with the third one, so it was awesome. But it really was. It was a great weekend. Newport, Rhode Island. We crashed the Newport Jazz Festival. The America's Cup boats were sailing in the background. And, you know, after being institutionalized, it was a pretty good weekend. So anyway, I told Dan, I said, Dan, listen, when I sell my house, I had incurred all these bills, you know, money I didn't have. And I said, you know, when I sell my house, I'm going to send you a couple of grand. I didn't trust myself with my own money. And when I'm ready, I'm going to have you send it back and I'll come visit. He said, okay, great. So I gave him a check for a couple $1,000s, and lo and behold, a week or two later, I sold my home. So I paid all my bills. There was a lot of wreckage. My recollection is I had like $16,000. Now this is 1987, okay? Just to put it into perspective. So off I go to Honolulu. And I stayed with them for a couple of weeks while I looked for an apartment. And then I got an apartment. And basically what I did for, I guess the first year or so, was drink and sail. I bought a little Hobie Cat. And if you ever watch Magnum PI, that's where I used to sail. And it was paradise, you know. I would get up around noon, I'd go up to the other side of the island, I'd push my sailboat down into the water, go sailing for a few hours, come back, take a shower, go down to TGI Fridays, and then, you know, slowly but surely the places I went got a little more sordid. But that was my life. Well, the money ran out. So I got my first career job. I was a major accounts manager for a private telephone company, and I lasted a year at that job. That was pretty good. At the end of the year, I was really having trouble getting to work in the morning, and my boss was ready to let me go. 10 years later, I talked to Gary, and it was interesting. I said, yeah, Gary, I had a kind of a problem with alcohol. And he said, geez, Ken, I never knew that. I thought you just had trouble getting up in the morning. Well, the reality was I didn't get home till 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, and then I needed to get some sleep. So Somewhere in there, I had gotten married. I had taken a hostage. She had taken a hostage. Whatever. You guys are great. You laugh at everything. Wasn't so funny at the time. During this period of time, I racked up a bunch of DUIs. Now, mind you, Hawaii didn't have reciprocity with Massachusetts, or Florida, for that matter. In Florida, by the way, I had been forbidden to ever come to this state again. And I live here now, so that's kind of amazing. But I had racked up a few DUIs. I get this career job. I leave after a year. I'm very quickly hitting bottom. I can remember one night in TGI Fridays, there's 350 people. That was capacity, and all I know is it was capacity pretty much every night I went there. And I couldn't get drunk, and I couldn't get sober. And I remember the loneliness, the horrible, horrible, horrible loneliness, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I have never, ever felt that way since. They shut me off, and even that was okay. So time marches on. I land my second career job. I was the fountain sales manager for a national beverage company. They gave me a parking place with my name on it. They told me that I had to take the woman that ran all the McDonald's, or I guess it was Burger King, out to dinner at the best restaurant in Honolulu, John Dominus, in the 7-Up route. So I did that. They didn't tell me that when they went home, I probably ought to go home. So, long story short, I got called on the carpet. I don't remember what I did that night, but I did something. And I got called on the carpet at work next time we were gone. And lo and behold, a few days later, I got a DUI, and that was the end of my job. 29 days. Now, it's interesting because a couple of things. I remember walking in my office for the first time, and there were printouts like this high. I had no clue what to do with them. But anyway, I lost that job, and it's a job that I'd even love to have today. You know, it was just a perfect job for a recovering person. And as it turns out, when I did finally sober up, one of the guys in my pack was one of the managers at that firm, and I'm sure he had a lot to do with their decisions with me. Turns out my boss was a Honolulu police officer, so he probably knew more about me than I knew about myself, because I was usually in a blackout. Also, mind you, this drunk's not real stupid, so whenever they pulled me over, I would just get out of my car and put my hands behind my back. No breathalyzer, I'm not stupid. Why they let me go, I have no idea. I'm very quickly approaching bottom here. I went out on what was to be my last drunk. I'll never forget it. I had asked the super at the condo where I live if he wanted to go out, and he said, yeah, that'd be great. So anyway, this particular night, I go to get him, and it's like 7 o'clock at night, and he's already passed out. So I was a little irritated at that. So I went out and tied one on, and I don't know if I got a DUI that night or not, but very shortly thereafter, I got a drinking and driving charge, and I was released the following morning. And I'll never forget my then wife. You know, she would come down to Honolulu Police Department with her dear friend, and the look of disgust on her face, I can still see it today. And anyway, I was released, collected my belongings, went home, and I went out the next night and did the exact same thing. Exact same thing. I'm on the cold steel bed in the Honolulu Police Department for the second time in 3 nights. Now, mind you, the middle night I was in jail. So, you know, it sounds funny, but that's where my drinking took me. I had to drink. I had crossed a line, and I didn't know that. I was physically addicted to alcohol. So I said a prayer from that cold steel bed, and it was, God help me. God help me. I didn't want to live, and I didn't want to die. I lost my mom at 14. I failed to tell you that 2 weeks after I moved to Honolulu, the first call I received was from HPD, and it was call home. My brother had died of a heart attack, my older brother, at 36 years old. So a lot of tragedy in my family, and I couldn't do that to my family. So I was afraid to live, and I was afraid to die. You know, it was probably worse to live at that particular point. I said a prayer. I went home the following morning, and my then wife said to me, "Ken, you have to go to the hospital to detox." And I said, "Okay," which was kind of unusual. I said, "Just give me 5 minutes." And she said, "No, you either go right this minute or I'm going to have you committed." So off we went to Queens Hospital, and I spent 10 days in the detox ward. In that period of time, a gentleman came down from the North Shore of Hawaii from a halfway house, and they had a bed for me. It was a one-year commitment. Now, I don't know about anyone else, but when you're newly sober, a year is forever. What's going to happen to the wife? What's going to happen to the car? What's going to happen to the apartment? What's going to happen to this? What's going to happen to that? In Hawaii at that time, you only had three options for treatment. One was Salvation Army, which was a 4.5 month program. The other was Castle Hospital, which was 30 days, but you had to have insurance, and I didn't have insurance. And then the third was Habilitat, which is where it's 1 year and they strip you of your identity and build you back. So none of that really seemed to work for me, but at any rate, the nurse had told me that there was a meeting of AA. I believe it was either a Tuesday or a Thursday morning. I take that back. The gentleman, Bill, that talked to me about the halfway house, he said, "You know, Ken," he said, "beyond the halfway house," he said, "I think you need a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, "I believe there's a meeting at noon tomorrow." Well, I talked to the nurse and found out there was a noon meeting, but there was also a 9 a.m. meeting. And I showed up at the 9 a.m. meeting in my Johnny and my slippers. There were probably 8 or 10 people there. And it was like, you guys were just, "Where you been, Ken?" And I was home. There was hope in that room. I didn't know a thing at that particular point other than I needed some hope. And I looked at the people in that room and they were happy and smiling. And for you guys that are new, get a home group. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Get a sponsor. Okay? So let's talk about that. They told me not to drink one day at a time. That made complete sense to me. What a novel concept. Just don't take a drink today. Huh, I can do that. But the 90 meetings in 90 days, oh my gosh, this isn't going to be fun. And this old guy, Calvin, he's the one that taught me about blackouts. He said, "Ken, you only have to do it one day at a time. Just go to a meeting tomorrow." Okay, I can do that. So I had 126 meetings on my slip at 87 days sober. And I went, by the way, I'm in a private step study with my pack. You guys that have this meeting, I guess you have a pack that you run with. Well, if you looked at my 12 and 12, you would see 12 or 13 guys. And Bogey, Sid, Wolf. Yeah, crazy names. You know, I'm in Hawaii. And I'm the white guy. So we're having this step study once a week at my sponsor's house and his sponsor, Big Richard. And Big Richard's sponsor was Harry Lake. And Harry Lake, and this is a closed meeting, an open meeting, and I apologize for using full names. I shouldn't have done that. Anyway, Harry was the one that brought AA to Hawaii. So there was a pretty tough line of sponsorship as I know it today. But we were on the fourth step this day that I went to court. So needless to say, I carried around some stuff for quite a while. So I went off to court and I pled guilty to 6 charges of drunken driving, 4 without a license. I had a guilty dismissal and acquittal on my record. I was facing 5 years of mandatory time, and I had 2 probation officers go to bat for me. I don't know what they call that test you take when you have a problem with drinking, but I used to score low risk. And it seems when I got honest, I was high risk. So these two POs went to bat for me, and they were trying to put me in a situation where I could go to treatment or get some type of help but not have to go to prison. There's no county jail in Honolulu. So, long story short, I went before this judge who I had been in front of before for a car accident, and I took 2 days of court time and I tried the case myself, and at the very end of 2 days, a beer came up. And you know, I had engineering drawings of the road and all of this stuff. Well, I did a good job, and she congratulated me, but she remembered me. And she asked my then wife why she let me drink. And so I figured I'm a goner. Well, she sentenced me to 6 months, and they used to let you go home on the weekends. I didn't get to go home. I went right off to Oahu Community Correctional Center, Dorm 6. And I like to tell you about that because, let me tell you, this is me. You know, I went to work every day. We didn't wear a shirt and tie in Hawaii. We wore aloha shirts. But here I am in prison. There's a guy walking around with an M16. And if, you know, just so you know, I need to do this for me. You know, this is my 31st birthday. That is like, wow. My first sponsor had 4 years and I thought he was lying. So here I am in this dorm and I get the last rack in the dorm. There are four white guys in the dorm and they're using that rack to work out. So that should give you an idea how much fun it was for a while for me. And then 30 days into it, my then wife decided she wanted a divorce. So it became really hard time. A lot of things happened during that period of time. You know, the needle came through the dorm and I never had a problem with outside issues, but I thought maybe, and I didn't, thank God. But what I like to share, particularly for you guys that are new, this white card has the preamble, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the serenity prayer, and it's about 15 cents at the intergroup or central office. I picked this up on October 28th, 1985. It's been in the Pacific, it's been in the Atlantic, it's been in my pocket the whole time. I have lost everything in my sobriety, but I've never lost this. This little card, all I needed was another alcoholic and God. And I know how to summon God. The four of us would hold a meeting. And what happened for us is the guards decided, you'll like this, this is funny. The guards decided that it was inciting a riot. True story. So we just did it a little quieter. And I will tell you that I'm sober today. My friend Mark, who had outside issue problems, he's sober today. I spoke to him last week. Joe is in and out ever since. And Larry, we believe, is sober. So this works, and it works in jail. I just like to share that. Get one of these cards. They used to tell us to tape a dime on the other side. Do you guys know what a payphone is? I know you don't know what a phone book is. But they used to tell us to take that and have half a dozen names, the central office number, and put that in our pocket, and we'll always have everything we need. And if the dime's taped on your white chip and you feel like drinking, 2 minutes. Are you serious? Oh, wow. Okay, I'm in my drunk a lot, so I'm going to take 2 minutes and, wow. Okay, I have so much to share. That came out wrong. Okay, I'll wrap up. This is an incredible journey. I sobered up. I went through jail. I went through 5.5 months of treatment. I got married. I got divorced. I got remarried here in Florida at 9 years sober. And I looked up at those steps and traditions and I said, wow, this works. I've been involved in the service structure of our fellowship. I've gone all the way to the bottom. And if you want to have a privilege, let me tell you what. When I walked in this room, I got a dozen friends sitting here. Our book says to watch a fellowship grow about you. This is an experience you must not miss. Don't miss it. That's it. I got so much more to tell you, but I'm not gonna. Thank you.